Innovation, disruption, and big issues. This is Business Game Changers with Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. This is Sarah Westall. Today's show is going to be a lot different than what I usually do and the guests that we usually have. Today, we are bringing on Champlin Tigg. T-I-G. Tigg is his name. And he's a really interesting character. Let me give you a little bit of his background. He died. He was officially dead for 7 minutes. And before he died, he was a different person than after he died. He became a completely giving person after he died. And his entire mission now is to end hopelessness. Before he died, he had a pretty rough life. He was an abused child, very abusive childhood. And he was homeless, and he lived in a tree for 2 years. He had a lot of interesting things that happened to him, but he ended up dying. And he'll explain this whole situation where he had a heart problem and everything else. But during that process, he had the most peaceful situation, and he'll explain that and what he experienced, and it ultimately changed his life. What he's doing now, he has a marketing agency, and he works with the who's who of Fortune 500 companies. He's worked with GE, NBC, AT&T, NASA, Disney, IBM, I mean, you name it. He's worked for a lot of different large companies. But then he takes 100% of those profits and he plows it into his nonprofit. But his whole life mission is to end hopelessness. And he says, love them like they've never been loved before. That's his motto. And he has an organization that is called Children of Fallen Soldiers. I think he said it's changed to American Children of Fallen Soldiers. He has a Dare to Dream tour that he does. He likes to help all kids. Basically, he works with kids, youth 30 and under. And he has another International Youth Services Registry where he's trying to bring all these youth programs together. Very, very interesting person. So we are going to get right into that interview now with Champlin Tigg.
Hello, Tigg. Welcome to the program.
My pleasure. Really been looking forward to this.
Well, good. I'm glad that you could make it today. You have a really interesting background. So I want you to, before we get really deep into your background, which listeners are going to want to hear, tell us what your big goal is.
My big goal is to create an infrastructure that, actually, you know what? I'm sorry. Can I start that over?
Yeah, go ahead. Just start with your big goal.
Okay. Sorry. My LED lighting started going nuts. All right, that's okay. Okay. So my big goal is to create an infrastructure where our for-profit businesses can completely support all of the admin and the infrastructure expenses of our nonprofit businesses, so that we have a sustainable universe of do-goodery. And
but what is your big goal for do-goodery? What is it that you really, because, you know, having one operation support the other, that's a great goal. But I mean, that's a great operational thing. But what is your big goal? Like, what do you want your stuff to do?
Okay, that is a great question. That's why you get the big bucks. At my core, I want to help people find out why they're on this planet. Help them figure out what their dreams are, and help them to go through the processes that are needed for them to achieve those. The dream development process begins for the majority of people with having hope for tomorrow. The most people that I talk to are in that position where they're really struggling with the hope just for tomorrow and the hope for their better future. And so that's stage one, is really having hope for a better future. And then once we get somebody to where they're like really excited about tomorrow, then you can move on to the next stage of helping them to, you know, for target acquisition. Why am I on this planet? What are my gifts? What am I really good at? And then you can move to the next stage of building the dream, and then the next stage of living the dream, and then the final stage of creating a legacy out of that dream so it lives beyond you. But it all starts with having hope for a better tomorrow. And that's where our war on hopelessness really finds its home, is really just battling all those things that on a daily basis are attacking our kids' hope and really our kids. I target folks that are 30 years and younger primarily just because that's the best age for the plasticity of our minds to be able to make grand changes and big changes of thinking. But of course, having hope for tomorrow, we're all dealing with that. And we all go through our ups and downs of having hope for our future.
So you have a war on hopelessness. You want to end hopelessness, and you want to help people find their dreams and what they're meant for in on this planet. And do you believe everybody has something that they're meant to do?
I do. There are a lot of people that are listening to this that, you know, there's a huge spectrum of beliefs and ideologies. I happen to be, my spiritual beliefs are non-denominational Christian, and I really believe that no matter what your spiritual belief is, whatever that core is, we all have a reason for being here. None of this is a mistake. You can't dig too deep into the intricacies of how we all work and how everything happens without starting to question that there is some order in the chaos. And there is something that not only are you particularly skilled to do, but because of all of the pains that you've had in your past, all of the unique challenges that you've gone through in your life, it's like a fingerprint. There are certain things that you've experienced that nobody else has, and that gives you a unique qualification to help people in a very specific way that nobody else can. And so if you get really good at taking all of your pains and all of your past, and just like any good tool, using that to sharpen, you know, your blade and to create a tool that is really good at helping people who have gone through similar problems or are in similar problems, then that really makes you a specific kind of special forces warrior that can help people like nobody else on the planet. And specifically for somebody who is going through pains, extreme pains, whether it be at home, at work, whether it be, you know, wherever in your life, as soon as you get that really can empower a person to go through very difficult situations in their life with a renewed purpose of getting the most out of it so that they can do something with it when they're through, or even just surviving it, knowing that maybe there's a plan for this.
Well, you've had an amazing death experience. You died, and you obviously you came back. That has motivated you towards this goal. Can you explain that experience and what happened and why that gave you a whole nother insight?
Yes, ma'am. That happened on March 25th, 2013. One of the challenges that I deal with is some short-term memory loss that occurred, and it's amazing how our brains are. It's getting better and better and better as I work the different parts of my brain. But I have a pacemaker. I was born with a heart defect. It was completely a miracle that I even survived birth. I was flown, airlifted to a special hospital when I was born, and my heart expanded so that it could handle the volume at a very low heart rate. My heart specialist, I grew up with him saying to me that, you need to stay thin, you need to stay running, and use it almost like a runner's heart because otherwise it's not going to sustain you. So that's what I did. And then at a certain point, when I was around maybe 21, it got down to 22 beats a minute, and you can't do much at that. And so they put the pacemaker in. And then the leads that go from the pacemaker down into the heart, at a certain point when I was working out, whoa, that is so weird. I was actually wearing this shirt when I was working out, and the leads cracked that go down into the heart, and they were bleeding electricity into the muscles and everything. So that started a process where my doctors and the manufacturer were trying to figure out how they were going to, replace and do everything that they needed to do. That is a whole nother story that at the time, as a chaplain, we didn't have insurance, and it was a year of miracles. It ended up being the doctor, the manufacturer, everybody involved donated time, donated resources so that it could be done. So many people are just so full of like love and care. It's absolutely amazing. So all this happens, and then they go in. They have this amazing tool that goes in. It's like a little laser Roto-Rooter that goes in through the lead, and it's cutting through to then pull the lead out. Well, the lead was anchored into a very thin area of the heart that just was kind of in a blind spot, and the laser just kind of burned a hole in the heart. It's about a 3 millimeter hole, about the size of a straw. So at that size, you've got probably 19 to 21 seconds before all your blood's gone. And I had this amazing thoracic surgeon on standby, a combat marine, who saw it happen on the monitor, and he scrubbed in and he sawed me open and cut his way to the heart, and then found where the hole was. And by the time he got in, all my blood was gone, and he found the hole, plugged it with his finger, and they started filling me back up with fluids. And after, 13 units, there's enough hydraulic pressure in the system to where he could bring me back. So I was gone for around 7 minutes, and there's no real reason why I'm still here. It's not something that you should really survive, and especially with most of your marbles together. Just it was absolutely a miracle, and I didn't have any type of out of body experience that I recalled at the time. I just remember waking up with this absolute peace. You know, the Bible talks about a peace that passes understanding. You know, this I believe that just I just kind of grazed the a room and just had like a glimpse of a feeling of what it's like to not have the pressure of daily life that we live in.
So it changed you, right? Yeah, that sense of peace. Did you feel that peace was something you've never felt before? It was
no,
it just incredible.
It's I've journaled trying to capture what it was like, and I don't have the words. I'm not a good enough writer, and I really can't do any justice to it. It truly is beyond my explanation, and to the point where, you know, there were the first 2 weeks were really euphoric, and after that, it just the every day kind of the pressures of just daily existence kind of felt like it was coming back. And I ended up going through a pretty severe depression over the next really the next 3 months. I was really angry. I did not. I was angry that I was still alive, which is an odd thing to say, but I was. Every day I would feel a little bit more of this, the flesh, the, you know, just alive, the pressure of breathing. And it really took that full 3 months for me to buy into, okay, I'm alive for a reason. It's no coincidence that this happened right when, you know, my kids are kind of go, you know, flying out of the nest, and I'm at this new stage of my life where I can really pour out my life into a calling, and that daily that having to remind myself of there is you're on a mission, you're not alive to have a good day. That may happen. But I truly believe that I'm here to accomplish a mission, and that's what this—that's when this war on hopelessness was born. It was within my first 2 weeks of recovery when we found out that Matthew Warren had taken his life. And it was just such a tragedy. You know, when you think of a young person that is going through so much pain, that taking their life is a choice. That is the war on hope. That's something that is, you know. Whether, you know, it's depression, it's mental illness. There's so many different things that are attacking that hope to the point where somebody's ready to make that decision. And that's when I found that out. That's what really exploded inside of me of, no, we're declaring war on hopelessness right now. And that's what started this process of kind of what we're building now.
I want to get into some of that hopelessness and what your project is and what you're doing. But before I get into that, it's a little bit more, I want to ask you about your death experience. So have you come to the conclusion that that's what life after death is, what you experienced? You said you kind of just brushed it. So are you 100% convinced that this is what life after death is and your fear of death is gone?
There's a lot to unpack in what you asked, but as far as the fear of death, absolutely. I don't fear death at all. I absolutely, not in any type of macabre way. I want to accomplish my job, but I am looking forward to whenever my job is done. I mean, the absolute second. I don't want to put in overtime if I don't have to. Whenever my job is done, I'm looking forward to what's on the other side of the door. I think that, again, I believe that everything is completely purposeful. So I think that, like, these bodies are designed for this environment. You know, you take a Lamborghini, it's completely designed for the streets. You take a Lamborghini and you try and go up a mountain, and it's not fit for that. And I think that just in that, with that same idea, that these bodies are designed for this environment on Earth. I don't think that we're capable. I don't think my brain is really capable to have a full understanding of what heaven's like, what our next journey is like. I think that what I experienced is just a brush against it. And
So do you think it's even more incredible than what you brushed against?
Oh yeah, I don't think that there's any comparison at all to what I experienced. I think that what I experienced is like
a glimpse,
the shadow of a glimpse.
Why do you think that?
There's this wonderful story about in the Old Testament about Moses going up into the mountain to spend some time with God, and Moses asking, "Hey, can I see you?" And basically God's saying, "Okay, you couldn't handle it. You know, you couldn't. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to basically let you see kind of just the little glimpse of the shadow of the backside of just like the little bit of what your body can handle." And the Bible says that, like, as he was coming down the mountain, like, he was glowing. And, you know, I don't know whether that's, you know, some radioactive isotope that, you know, he's actually, like, glowing, or if he's, you know, just, you know, so overjoyed. But I believe that we're not able to fully grasp. We're not meant to. Our purpose here is not meant to grasp what's next. You know, as a parent, one of the joys of Christmas, or really any day that you have a present for one of your kids, is the secret. And, like, the joy of watching them unwrap mm-hmm. that and seeing what's behind the wrapping and all of the love and thought that you put into what joy that's going to bring them. And I think that that's part of it. I think that's, like, it's so cool. Like, we're so interested in what is next. And, you know, we constantly are asking, "Oh, can I pick it up? Can I shake it? Can I open, you know, peel back a little bit to see?" Because we're so interested about what is in the package, that will really do anything to get away with, like, what is it? But I don't think that we're meant to see what is there. Now, one of the things that was really interesting that it was almost a year later after after I died, I've just been, you know, almost just obsessed with that question of, you know, "God, what happened to me? What was it? What?" And just in just hours of just on my knees, just, you know, just thanking him for the opportunity to be a servant and to help other people and all the amazing things that have happened in this journey. I had this dream of when I died, me just kind of just I was an adult, but like as a kid, just like in Jesus's lap. And just that, and I had in my dream that feeling again of that peace. And when I say that peace, it's just really just like the, like everything is perfectly how it's supposed to be. And there's absolutely no concern that you have, and everything is right, lined up the way that it's meant to be. And then I woke up, it was almost like, okay, I'll let you shake the package a little bit. Here's kind of what, you know, something you can understand of what happened and, you know, your, you know, tin can of a brain to understand, like, possibly like what happened is just for a millisecond, you weren't there and you were here. I had you protected. And then, you know what? It's not your time going back there. It's you got to clock back in. And that's as close as I ever got to an answer. And I think I will get until, you know, my job is done, but I have no fear of dying. And I truly believe that, you know,
did you no have matter a, what happens to oh, I'm me, sorry, go ahead.
No. I don't think that there's anything that could possibly happen to me that will stop me until the time is, you know, when I'm done, I'm done. And then, you know, time clock.
Well, did you have a fear of dying before you died? I mean, like, 'cause I have a fear of dying. I think most people do. It's a natural feeling, right? You're born with that instinct to be afraid.
I'm sure that I may have, I was an angry child. You know, I grew up in a abusive home and I,
you were homeless for 2 years, right? You lived in a tree.
Yeah, that was fun. There were fun parts of it. Again, mm-hmm. going through difficult times is not enjoyable. And, you know, it's just not to minimize the terrible things that happen to humans in a lot of cases. But I see things like working out, you know, I personally hate running. Every time I try and run more than, you know, a couple miles, you know, I throw up. I just hate running. But there are certain elements of working out that are good for accomplishing a certain purpose. I see a lot of the things that I went through, whether abusive situations. I was homeless for a couple of years. Dying. There are a lot of things that I, when I look back, instead of being angry, which I was angry for many decades, and just filled with that anger and questions of why, until I accepted that, although I wasn't responsible for what other people did to me, or I wasn't necessarily responsible for some of the situations that I was placed in, I'm responsible 100% for how I react and how I decide to go and deal with these things in my life. And once I made that decision, it really helped shape how I could look at it. Some of the pieces and things that have happened have formed a tool that I'm able to work with kids and young adults that are going through things, and because of the perspective that I can see it from through experiencing it, I can really get in the trench with them and kind of envelop myself in the pain that they're in and help them figure out, you know, how to get themselves out of it. I truly believe that the best skills that I've been able to forge are getting into the trench with somebody and never like reaching down into the trench and trying to help somebody up. That never works. You got to get into the mud and the muck with them and put your arms around them and love them like they've never been loved before, and really then help them. Once you're in the trench, you're loving them, then you can help them figure out, okay, you know, you've got all the tools to get yourself out and figure out what you need to do. I'm right there beside you. Let's do it together.
Well, you have a client list of the who's who, Fortune 500 companies and all sorts of people. But one group that you specifically work with are children of fallen soldiers. We have an epidemic in this country of suicides, as you know. We've had, just in the past decade, we've had over 80,000 of our veterans commit suicide. So we have a big problem out there. And you've been working with those people. What have you done to help them, and what are you seeing?
Wow. Yeah. There are so many hurting people, and sometimes it really is overwhelming. I happen to just kind of fall into creative work and back around the 96 area. That's when I kind of fell into to creative work and special effects for TV and film, and just happened to start doing creative work for some folks. And that, you know, as a kind of a creative business mind entrepreneur, when you do something well for somebody and somebody realizes why you really care about me, then they ask, well, can you do this and this? And then as a business owner, you say, sure, absolutely I can. And you run away and figure out how to do it, and, you know, and how to serve people better. And so it grew into an ad agency, a creative agency pretty quickly. And then through that in 2000, that's when I had the honor of starting Children of Fallen Soldiers, which was what it was called at the time. We started working just with the military widows and the orphans. And at the time, it was just coincidentally before 9/11. And at the time, there were so many holes in the walkway that these families would fall through, and to where they really felt like nobody was there for them, nobody cared. And since then, I mean, the way that society interacts with them is completely different. And now, you know, anybody who comes up to a veteran, you know, thank you for your service. I mean, there's so much societal
more appreciation now than there used to be.
Yeah.
Is that helping them a lot, you think? Or is there
it
pain?
It helps as much as somebody coming up to you and saying, hey, you know, thanks for, you know, thanks for doing whatever you do. It's that, you know, it's a moment of appreciation. But when you think about like somebody who's gone through trauma, usually with any type of trauma, there's a rush of support for whether that's that immediate day, or maybe, a month, 3 months. But then after a very short period of time, you start feeling guilty for bringing it up again, and people kind of almost expect you to kind of get on and reintegrate with society, whether that's losing a husband, whether that's losing, a child, whether that's having, whether that's dying, whether that's coming back from military service, losing friends, whatever trauma. Trauma can be anything to us. It can be a bad dream. I mean, the trauma and what society expects as its levels of traumatic effect have no bearing on what trauma is to us and how we experience it. Something that I go through is going to be completely different than something that you or your listeners go through. We all experience it in our own unique way. So tie that into then somebody who's then lost a parent, how, depending on their age, how they need a lifetime of support. They don't just need to, be surrounded and made to feel uncomfortable for, a month and then abandoned. And that's very similar. You bring up the issue that one of the many issues we're dealing with matriculating service members as they're coming back into civilian life. They're dealing with so many issues that we're just not prepared to deal with as humans, of being put into situations that really put us into this moral terrible place of how do I line all these pieces up, and then coming back into a society that is based clearly on if you're a good person, this is what you get, and if you're a bad person, this is what you get, and trying to line those up in your brain as you're coming back can be really challenging. So,
and it's hard for them because when they go there and they see what's really going on with war, it's hard for them to reconcile what we're doing and whether we're on the good side or bad side. And I would assume it's very difficult.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there are so many different levels of what you're dealing with. You're dealing with the, society is complicated. So there's the interpersonal side and the things that you've seen. There's also like the family side of the closeness and the bonds that you create in the ultimate stressful situations that can't be replicated in normal, 9-to-5 environments. And in a lot of ways can't be even replicated in close family environments. So there are certain, stimuli and response situations that can't be replicated in without that extreme. And then there are the moral injuries that somebody comes back with that are very challenging to deal with. And if you don't take that on and deal with it, it's just like any other wound. It festers and ends up killing you. We need to deal with individually. Again, I believe, take 100% responsibility for absolutely everything in my life. Yeah, there are things that are going to happen to me that I don't have control over, but I am 100% responsible for how I interact with you and what I choose to do. And that's completely in my power. And we all need to, we all need to step into those shoes to where then, okay, there are areas in my life that if I'm going to interact well, I need to look at my life and I need to look at being physically healthy as much as I can control it, and being, you know, emotionally healthy, spiritually healthy, relationshiply healthy. And that's what we do when we're trying to work with these different demographics, is we've developed tools to look at, to break life into manageable sections so that we can help, you know, get into the trench with somebody and figure out, okay, well, you know, what is your relationship like, life, you know, life like? What is your financial life like? What is your mental life, your physical life, your spiritual life, you know, all these different areas? What's your recreational life like? You know, what's your work and your purpose? So we can break life into manageable sections and help help them figure out what, you know, what does hope mean for them, and what are the big giants that you're warring against, so that we can have hope for our future and move you towards figuring out what your dream is, and let's go get it.
Well, you work with Children of Fallen Soldiers. What other groups do you work with? I know you're targeting kind of the big enchiladas of where hopelessness is. So, and Children of Fallen Soldiers is one of them. What other groups are you working with of people?
Well, Children of Fallen Soldiers ended up, we started rebranding it in 2012 to America's Children of Fallen Heroes. That's what it is now. And America's Children of Fallen Heroes just expanded the umbrella to include first responders also, who they deal with a lot of the same issues. But this is the name of the whatever organization it might be. It's almost for marketing, because that just then kind of puts a spotlight on a demographic. The real issue, what we want to do is, we've developed a dream development process. And so this dream development process, DDP, everything's got an acronym. It's basically a process for helping somebody figure out, you know, why they're here, have hope for tomorrow, and then the process of developing that dream into a reality, and then kind of also developing it so that it can be create a legacy out of it, so it lives beyond you. The demographics.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, when they realize that they have a purpose in life, and mm-hmm. that all the things that they've dealt with really help them become better at what their purpose is, does that almost lift weight off their shoulder and get them focused on the future and good things to come?
It can. It's just like anything else. You know, when you're working with hurting people, there are a lot, there's unfortunately always going to be people who aren't ready to not be hurting, mm-hmm. or for whatever reason. But we've seen so many young people and old people who, when they're ready to take responsibility for themselves, and they realize that. And really, when you think about it, it's both exciting and scary. I mean, you have to deal with fear before you can move through that wall. You figure that if I accept that I am 100% responsible for my actions and what I do, that means that I'm also 100% responsible, or at least partially responsible for the fruit on my tree. And that can be really, that can be a kind of a daunting concept, that, okay, well, if I never try, then I can always blame somebody else. But if I take responsibility, then I need to, like, look at some of the painful things going on inside me. The people who are willing to do that and really face that fear and punch it in the face. Those, I mean, it's like a, you know, it's like flowers growing on Bandini Mountain. It's absolutely a miracle what can happen in somebody's life.
So why do you think your work is so important now? I mean, is it more, I mean, I suppose it's always important to work on hopelessness, but do we have a bigger issue now than we might have had before?
I don't think we have a bigger issue. I think that because we're so much more connected and we know so much more about some of our problems, I think that it's really in our face. I think that a lot of our problems stem from, I mean, taking full responsibility. It comes from us being parents, you know, and it starts when, you know, kids are young. A lot of it falls on dads, kids absolutely, you know, they need good parents in their lives to help them see that, you know what, you're worth good things. There's something amazing that only you can do on this planet, and let's help you figure out all of the amazing things you're going to do in your life. And let me help you to like build yourself and build your tool set so that you have whatever you need. Let me teach you how to create other relationships and let's look at your weaknesses. And when you find some weaknesses in your life, let's teach you how to look for people out there that maybe could shore up that weakness. And how do you create those relationships so that you can build mentors in your life? And, you know, so many of these things that, that a lot of kids, the majority of kids that we work with, that we see in any different demographic, because we're working with kids who, there's America's Children of Fallen Heroes. And this is answering a question that you asked that I totally forgot. I apologize. But the demographic of America's Children of Fallen Heroes is just the marketing, you know, overlay for that demographic. The solution and what we want to build to offer is for basically any human that's, you know, 30 years or younger is what it's really targeted for. So it's also built for, you know, matriculating foster kids. I had the honor of serving on the Child Abuse Prevention Council, and we did a study and found that like 96-97% of the kids who are matriculating out of foster care within 5 years, they're either in jail or on drugs. Mm. So there's so many hurting mm-hmm. young people, and absolutely all of them have the potential for greatness. I mean, some of these brains are absolutely amazing when you talk to them and start like listening to like the ideas that they have. They're spectacular human beings. And if we have people who can then get in the trench with them and put their arms around them and love them like they've never been loved before, and then help them have hope for tomorrow and go through that dream development process with them, they are another miracle just waiting to happen. So that's in a nutshell kind of what we're building, is this infrastructure that can help. That can basically any other nonprofit or youth group or anything can plug into to help them really have all the tools to empower the young adults that they're working with, whatever demographic it might be. And if there's somebody who, you know, I have a heart for this particular subset of people, we want to be an organization that can then say, okay, we're going to help you figure out how to do that. And, you know, if you have a heart for those people, then we want to be an organization that can say, okay, we can help you do that, whether that's setting up a 501c3 and like help to put like the marketing package around that so that everybody understands what it is and here's the tool set. Because there's plenty of people with passion, but there's not a lot of interconnectivity in all those people with passion. And if you don't mind me rabbit trailing, that's one of the things that we found with our first Dare to Dream event right after I died. I was really just, you know, with all of the emotions that were happening after my recovery, I wanted to put on this this War on Hopelessness event, and we called it our Dare to Dream program. And it was basically for all youth, you know, 30 and younger. And it was using the thrill of extreme sports. So we brought in X Games, you know, just some of the world's best freestyle motocross riders, you know, set up a course. They threw their bikes up in the air and everything and just like had thousands of kids come. And the idea was, okay, you come to this event because of the extreme sports, but then when you get there, we help you figure out, you know, remind you to dare to dream and make a connection with you and then help you to, you know, figure out what those points are to achieving your dream. But in putting that event together, one of the things that we quickly realized was that there are youth service organizations they were within 10 minutes of resources that didn't know that they were there. And so one of the organizations that we're starting is the International Youth Service Registry, which will help to create interconnectivity. So let's say that, as an example, there's a suicide prevention center in Austin that is just getting amazing results. You know, we could do a white paper on what's working with that organization and disseminate it to all other youth service organizations that focus on the giant of suicide prevention. And then when we find these golden nuggets of organizations that are doing great work, but maybe they're not good at marketing, they're not good at putting on events, we can step in because of the ad agency, you know, we can step in and provide that and help people in whatever area they need help with. You know, we can come in, and that's kind of like the big goal of what we want to build, is helping people be more connected that are doing great stuff. Because a lot of these amazing people are just, they're in their trench. They're working hard, but their head's down and they can't go up and like look around because they're too busy with their passion. So that's what we want to help people kind of connect, and where the weaknesses are, we want to bring our tool set and just help them do more of what the great stuff that they're doing.
Okay. So then how can people get hold of you then? Since you have a lot of great ideas, you can help a lot of people in a lot of ways. How do they get hold of you?
Easiest way is if you go to quietlyworking.us, that's kind of the big picture of what we're doing. I've kind of broken up what we're doing into for-profit and non-profit. And the for-profit, we've kind of turned into public benefit, which is kind of the new model for all of our for-profit work. 100% of the profits go to our nonprofit support. So that's kind of the infrastructure we're trying to build right now.
So companies can support the effort by just doing the for-profit thing, and that allows all the profits, and it really helps your organization thrive as well.
Right. Yeah. I think that's the new or going to be the new model of how nonprofits are going to really survive. As I really threw myself into my chaplaincy and our nonprofit, I learned what a struggle it is to run a nonprofit. And in many ways, it was easier to run the ad agency and just focus on making money. With the you know, when you're in business, you're who you're serving and who you're getting money from are typically the same person. And so it makes that exchange of goods and services pretty simple. But when you're a nonprofit, the people you're serving are not the people that you're getting your money from. So you almost have dual customers, and who you're getting money from, everybody has a different desire of what they're looking for in return. So it can get really, really challenging. And I don't think it's a real sustainable model. So what we're trying to create is a sustainable model. So for anybody who wants to learn more, quietlyworking.us is the public benefit, you know, the for-profit services that we offer, and we've been doing it, you know, since 96. And those services are really, you know, helping businesses grow. We do public speaking, we do events, we do ad agency stuff. And then quietlyworking.org is our nonprofit stuff, what we're working on with America's Children of Fallen Heroes. And go ahead.
Same name. And I'll have all that information up on the radio page and Yahoo or with YouTube. I'll have, you know, I'll put your website and stuff up there. But this is really great. It's really great to know that there's people out there doing what you're doing, and your past experience is pretty interesting. And we didn't even get into the difficult childhood that you had and living for 2 years homeless and all those other things. And we did a little bit, but very interesting. So I appreciate you coming onto the show today.
Absolute pleasure. And I thank you so much. And I just, you know, anybody who's listening, who is, who's going through, you know, a challenge, whether they don't have hope for tomorrow. So they're waking up and not really sure, like, what is this all about? I would just really encourage you to, one, know that you're not alone. I mean, I am here for you. Literally, you are the reason why I'm still alive. If you're battling hopelessness, somebody out there cares enough about you to keep me alive so that I would be here for you. And go to chaplaintig.com and, you know, get a hold of me, and I am absolutely here for you. You are not alone. And then just realize that, like, there's something so special about you. You are so unique. There's something that you offer people that nobody else can do the way that you can. And just be encouraged by that, and realize that there are tools and there are people who love you and care and want to help you extract every little bit of awesome that is inside you. So,
well, thank you.
That's the message. And thank you so much for your time too. You're doing such an amazing job. You're such a talented interviewer, and you're so, you're such a loving person and so great at asking wonderful questions. I really appreciate your time doing this.
Well, thank you so much. I hope you have a great weekend.
I guarantee I will.
Okay, hold on.
And that's all we have today. You know, it's so nice having somebody who is dedicating their entire life to helping solve some of these problems that we talk about every day on our show. We bring and talk about all the issues around the world. And when you find somebody who's dedicating their entire life to solving some of these issues, it's really great to focus on them and think about what they're doing and how we can do a little bit about what, you know, a little bit of what they're doing to make the world a better place. So I hope you enjoyed that interview with Champlain Tigg, and I hope you got something out of it. Before we go on, I want to remind you that I have the book called Wrong Side of History that is now available. It's on the Syrian war and what's really going on there and the details behind Assad. And I also have a book that's coming out. It's in proof stage right now. It'll be out next week. It's called First, and it's on the inventor who first invented blockchain. It's a don't miss book. It's really interesting to see how that came about. The people think it's a different person. The world thinks it's a different person who invented blockchain, but Kels Wilson. Dr. Kels Wilson was the first one to invent blockchain, and the book talks all about that. So for now, I hope everybody has an amazing week and amazing day.